2007-1168, Errico International against Mutech Corporation. Mr. Sprinkle.
May it please the court. My name is Doug Sprinkle, and I'm here today appealing the grant of a preliminary injunction precluding the defendant from selling these hooks. These are the hooks that are in question. The interesting thing about these hooks is that this hook falls exactly within Claim 1 of the patent suit, which everybody agrees is invalid. And it also is essentially identical to the OBO hook, which everybody agrees is prior art, and therefore cannot be infringed, because if it did infringe, then the claim would be invalid. But this is the hook that they're doing from selling. The trial court found that the defendant Docs Marketing contributorily infringed Claim 7, which is a method claim, and the method claim speaks for itself, but the method claim in essence says 17. It's a method for supporting low-voltage communication cable using J-hooks with downturn flanges. These are the downturn flanges. And spacing the hooks so that the cable sag between adjacent hooks is less than 30 centimeters or about a foot. Now, in opposing the preliminary injunction, we raised a number of defenses, any one of which should have been sufficient to defeat the preliminary injunction. First of all, everybody agrees that more than a year prior to the filing date of the 994 patent, that installers of low-voltage communication cable use open-top supports. I'm not sure what their shape was, but they were open-top support, and that they would space the hooks and then pull the cables taut so that the sag between adjacent hooks was less than 30 centimeters or less than a foot. Everybody agrees that that's open. The inventor agrees. The court realized that in fact had occurred more than a year prior to the filing date of the patent, but that there was no evidence that J-hooks were used to support those cables. Well, the only difference between what was done before, more than a year prior to the filing date, and Claim 17 is the shape of the hook itself. It's well settled, in fact, it's black letter law, that in order to obtain a valid method claim, that the patentability must rely upon the method itself, and that the patentability of the claim cannot be predicated upon apparatus limitations appearing within the claim.
And where is this black letter? Where in the statute?
Section 101 of Title 35 says that you can get a patent for new apparatuses or new methods. It doesn't say for old methods using new apparatus or old methods using old apparatuses, as appeared in this case, which is the OBO.
Has the Supreme Court said anything new under the sun may be considered for patentability?
Absolutely.
They're saying unless what? Provided you don't use an apparatus to carry out a method?
Any new method under the sun certainly is patentable subject matter. That's exactly what the Supreme Court said, and I have absolutely no dispute with that, but the method itself must be new. And you can't simply add new apparatuses. This is the Lago case, which is from the CCPA, but still good law. It's still cited.
Judge O'Malley gave some real attention to this, and one of the things she mentioned with regard to the validity is the evidence of secondary considerations, long-felt need, commercial success, direct copying, or I think the three that she cites to. Why doesn't that give weight to her finding?
Well, the secondary considerations, commercial success, for example, have to be attributable to the claim itself. In this case, the claim says spacing the hooks apart from each other.
And rebut the nexus? Did you have adequate evidence in the record to show that the commercial success was not linked to this particular method?
No, but I think the onus goes the other way around. That the commercial success, that they have to link the nexus of the commercial success or the other secondary considerations to the claim itself.
Now, what was the evidence of commercial success? What was the evidence of secondary
considerations? They sell a lot of them. They sell a lot of those.
They have testimony? They have testimony.
They have testimony that they sell a lot of these hooks. That's correct.
And besides that, what was the testimony?
The testimony was that they sold like hundreds of millions of them. And that there's no question that we copied the hook. But the hook is claim one, and that's unpatentable. That was what we copied. But again, there was no nexus that was shown by the plan between the commercial success and claim 17. So I think that's all that we have to show on that.
So you're not saying that the hooks are in the prior art, is that right?
The OBO hook is certainly prior art. The OBO hook was used by the patent office to invalidate claim one during the prior
examination.
Because
this is what I don't understand. If the hooks are in the prior art, and if the commercial success doesn't depend on the design of the hook, why didn't your client just make the prior art hook instead of copying this one?
We didn't have a copy of the OBO hook, but there's really very little difference.
Why didn't you copy it? You didn't have it. You had a picture in the patent.
Well, after the fact, after we actually made the hook, then the OBO hook was filed. I guess the only answer to that is that if something's not patentable, like claim one of the patent suit, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with copying it. That's a Stifel decision from the Supreme Court back in the 60s. It's perfectly legitimate for you to copy something that's not patentable. Can I go on to another subject because I'm running out of time?
No, please.
Okay, thank you. Secondly, as we submitted in our brief, we view the court as improperly construing the claim. They construed the claim to say that the communication table includes anything that transmits data or a control signal. Now, in the prior art description, there's certainly a differentiation between HVAC systems and low voltage communication cable. The inventor, who appeared as a 30B6 witness, as a person most knowledgeable about the claim language, testified that low-voltage communication cable, as it's used in Claim 17, did not include HVAC systems. We have extensive evidence that DOCS hooks were used to support HVAC wire. I don't really know what the word control means or what it encompasses. It's a word that does not appear in the patent. I suppose it would encompass any electrical signal at all. If the electrical signal is connected to a strobe light, it controls the light by turning it on and off. By the very nature, all electrical signals control something. So I think that was an improper construction, because the trial court would necessarily have to find that there's no substantial non-infringing use, and the substantial non-infringing use that we presented was using these hooks to support HVAC systems. So I think it's the improper construction. The other thing that we did present during the testimony was a challenge to the validity under Section 103, namely the EIA or TIA standard. I think it's really EIA/TIA standard, which provides for the spacing of 120 centimeters. That was prior art.
And Judge O'Malley, depends on the fact that this has been through re-exam.
Yes.
Why shouldn't we give weight to the Patent Office's re-examination of its work?
I think you should give a lot of weight to the grant of the re-examination request filed by Docs Marketing that was filed, and they found that a substantial question of patentability was raised by the EIA standard, or TIA standard, and the OBO reference. And in granting that request for re-examination, the Patent Office found rather emphatically that the EIA standard was not before or during the prior re-exam. I think you should give a lot of weight to that.
Now,
the trial court gave no weight at all to that. In fact, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
You're talking about a current reexamination?
Yes.
But we know that the statute says that you don't grant reexamination unless it's substantial. I mean, those are the words of the statute,
absolutely,
aren't they?
Absolutely.
I'm trying to understand what weight, what extra weight you're asking us to give to the fact that reexamination has been granted. It isn't completed, is it? Has it proceeded?
No, nothing's actually, absolutely nothing's happened other than granting the request itself. I think the Judge O'Malley made a clear mistake of fact when she concluded erroneously that the EIA standard was before the Patent Office, and so therefore she gave great weight to the prior reexamination. The Patent Office concluded exactly the opposite. And if we look at the patent itself, we look in the we look at what was presented, and there's an ambiguous sentence appearing in the detailed description of the invention about in order to meet conforming standards.
Well, wouldn't one of skill in this art have known that the conforming standard was probably the EIA Alliance standard?
I don't know. The conforming standard may have been that the sag should have been less than 2 feet. I don't know what the conforming standard was.
Well,
no, but
one of skill in the art is going to understand you don't want a lot of sag, right? Isn't that pretty... I mean, the whole point of that hook is to avoid getting kinks in your lines, right? And so the whole point is you don't want sag because that gives kinks, and kinks are bad. So I'm having trouble. Why isn't there some degree of logic in what Judge O'Malley is saying?
Well, the hooks themselves, the downwardly flanges, are only described in the patent as reinforcing flanges. They're not described in any other fashion. So why that avoids a kink any more
no,
than
no, we're talking about the sag question. And okay, you're saying, well, conforming standards might not have meant 30 centimeters of sag. But I'm saying, golly, one of skill in the art's got to be able to figure that out, right? The whole point's to get rid of sag. The whole point's to pull it taut. And when you say conforming standard, maybe Judge O'Malley's right. That's getting rid of the sag.
Then in that case, why wouldn't somebody take the OBO hook, which is also used to support cable?
And the question is, why wouldn't your client take that hook instead of copying this one?
The OBO hook is very close to this one. But I think they would be happy if they could copy the OBO hook. I think they would be delighted.
But they didn't, right? They copied this one.
Yes, they copied their hook. There's absolutely no question about it.
It seems to be preferred by the industry, and according to, apparently, the evidence.
They sell a lot of hooks. There's absolutely no doubt about it.
Okay. You're into your rebuttal. Do you want to save it?
Yeah, let me just have one quick thing.
Okay.
In order to grant the reexamination request, they can't grant on old references, old prior art. We all know that. There has to be a new reference. The new reference that they used to grant the reexamination request was the EIA standard. So it was not before the Patent Office, and the Court's conclusion that it was.
Of course, it was before the District Court, though.
Pardon?
It was before the District Court, right?
The EIA standard?
Yeah.
Yes, because we brought it up before the District Court. I'd like to save a minute and a half. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Campbell?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. One of the things I've heard a lot about just recently. Yes,
tell me now. We've got this question of obviousness.
Mm-hmm.
The Patent Office says that the hook itself is prior art. Okay? You agree with that?
Yes.
And the standard, the EIA standard, is prior art also. And so the Claim 17 doesn't seem to do anything except combine the unpatentable hook together with a method for stringing the cable, which is set forth in a prior art industry standard. How could it be, under these circumstances, that this isn't obvious, the method?
Well, Your Honor, everything is a combination of old elements. You know, nobody comes up with really something different other
but
than
these
God.
These elements are right on the money.
These elements are very close, but they're not combined.
Not even very close. They're right on the money.
But nobody combined them before, and that's the key. And that's the key, always the patentability. Nobody ever did it before.
Are you sure no one's ever done it before? I mean, if conforming standards is but one of skill in the art would have understood, why wouldn't they have been doing this before?
Well, it is clear that nobody's ever done it before, and we know of that.
How do you know that?
We know of all that from the secondary considerations. What evidence
would you show me in the record that this method had never been practiced before?
The evidence that we have in the record is testimony from two different gentlemen at the hearing that Judge O'Malley had, and that was Mr. Lynch and Mr. Laughlin. And what they testified about is as soon as they made this invention, as soon as they made this combination, the industry realized, boy, this is wonderful, we love this. And immediately they rewrote the standards to include it. Immediately they adopted it. Everybody in the industry wanted to use it. It started selling from nothing to 100 million of these.
I don't understand. I thought the standard was prior art.
Yes. I'm sorry. There's many different standards in this art. It's not that there's one standard that covers everything. You know, in the electrical cabling industry, there may be 100 standards. But the standard which we're talking about, the TIA standard, was modified after Errico came up with his invention to specifically talk about Errico's invention. It was that groundbreaking to them.
What's that about the hook, you mean?
The combination of using the hook and this novel method. Now, you have to understand...
What novel method?
The novel method is the way it's used.
Tell me what the hook is.
Okay, the hook, we're not saying, is novel by itself.
What's the novel method?
Using the hook in a way that you can have sag, but you maintain the sag at less than 30 centimeters, and you do that in a way so as not to have kink. Now, you have to understand there's a lot of testimony on this. We're not a person of ordinary skill in the art. We have to rely on what we heard, what the testimony was. The testimony was that before Errico's invention, you had problems with either kinking or you had problems with crosstalk. If you stretch these cables taut through a cable tie, for example, you have crosstalk because you have a lot of cables over a very short period. They're all parallel to each other, and you get all this interference from crosstalk, which was bad, but they had to do that because they didn't want kinking, because kinking is even worse. What kinking does is you have something other than, for example, the hook we have here, and I can't tell whether that's an Errico hook or a Dox. They're so close.
But there's no mention of kinking in Claim 17, right?
Not to prevent kinking, but that's what it does.
Well,
it talks about...
But all Claim 17 is telling you to do is to take the hook and combine it with the pre-existing method, right? The pre-existing standard.
No, that's not exactly what it says. Because, yes, the standard talked about...
Well, what else does it say?
In fact, Claim 17 doesn't relate to the standard at all. The standard would be in Claim 20, which is a dependent claim. What Claim 17 says is that you want to have this novel method of hanging these cables with one of these hooks, so, with these downturned edges, so that you don't get cabling. It doesn't say so you don't get cabling, but that is what you get. That's why you have the downturn methods. That's why you have less than a foot of sag, is because you are now able to...
But the method in the prior art says exactly the same thing. The hook is prior art, the method's prior art. What have you got to give you any claim that you have something novel?
Well, no, the
let alone non-obvious.
The standard didn't say that you do these things to avoid kink or to avoid crosstalk. All the standard says...
Well, the purpose is irrelevant. It's what it defines as the method, and it says to minimize the sag.
No, there's no standard that says to minimize sag. The standard we're talking about is to have certain spacing, that spacing being...
Which will minimize sag.
Well... It can.
Inherently.
No, not
one of skill in the art does not understand this. We're not talking about hanging. We're talking about hanging cords here. Come on.
We're talking about something very simple, and that's what makes the invention all of the more dramatic. And that's why you look at these secondary...
What is the dramatic invention?
By using Errico's hook, suddenly people realized that they could hang these cables in a way that they didn't have crosstalk. They didn't get kinky, which creates noise and feedback and interference. It's very, very important in this developing science back in the 1990s with these cables that you don't have those. Is the hook prior art? Yes.
Is the EIA standard prior art?
The EIA standard is prior art, but not used.
Would one of skill in the art using the EIA standard and the hook, by virtue of using both of them, minimize kinking and crosstalk at the same time?
No, not necessarily.
They could make a mistake in using them, is what you're saying.
We have no idea what they would do. Because there was absolutely no testimony that you could do these. And in fact, Mr. Sprinkle had the opportunity to bring in a person of ordinary skill in the art to say, I would have combined these. They'd have been obvious to me. He didn't do that. He didn't bring in an expert who said, I would combine them. These would be obvious to me. We're applying a standard of clear error.
He was able to rely on the fact that the patent office said that when they said there was a substantial question of patentability as to the combination, right?
Your Honor, approximately 97% of all reexaminations are granted. So it's not that high of a threshold. If we're going to say that all of those patents are invalid, there would essentially be no patents because, or no patents which are re-examined, which are found to be valid. We know that's not the case because more than 50% are never changed.
I'm just trying to figure out here what in the prior art standard and the prior art hook and the knowledge of skill of one and knowledge of one of ordinary skill in this art wouldn't be suggested completely by your claim.
Well, Your Honor,
why wouldn't your claim completely be subsumed within those three?
Well,
what is there outside of that?
I think I would suggest we're looking at the wrong inquiry. The inquiry isn't what all the prior art is. The inquiry is whether you would combine the prior art. And if somebody would combine all the prior art in this fashion, they would get the invention. But the key is that they didn't. And the key is that, according to the Supreme Court and KSR, we can't just grab isolated pieces of prior art. Even though we don't have the TSM test, we still have to articulate some rationale to combine them. We have had no testimony on that.
But once the J-hook comes into existence and the standard is in existence, then isn't it obvious to combine them since they inherently use each other?
No. It's
no,
not
what
helpful.
Is not
first off,
obvious about that?
It's hard for me to say because I'm not a person of ordinary skill in the art. The persons of ordinary skill in the art testified at trial that, no, it was not obvious, and we have all
the same
considerations.
And we wouldn't use those standards.
Yes. In fact, they didn't. In fact, they had the standard before, right? And they had the J-hook, this Ogo Betterman hook, right? Those were all out there, but nobody ever combined them. And the reason why is because there was all these cross purposes. And the reason is that you didn't think that that was going to work. It did have...
What was caught away?
It's as simple as it seems. There was an unexpected result. The prior art did teach away. Because what the prior art said is you wanted to pull these things so taut that you can't have kinking. Because kinking was thought to be even worse than crosstalk. Right? You don't want crosstalk, and you don't want the kinking, because the kinking causes all this kind of noise in these cables. And we're talking about these high-speed communication cables that run your computers and phones and TVs and cabling and things like that. You have to minimize noise to make it go fast, to get bandwidth. And what they found is that they wanted to, since noise was really bad, they wanted to definitely minimize the kinking because the kinking causes the noise. But then that caused problems with crosstalk. Because
now you're trying to figure out. Now, see, let's assume that the new element here in the art is the downturned edges on your J-hook.
Right.
And the obvious purpose for the downturned edges on the J-hook are to allow you to bend the cord over the edge without causing any damage to the wire, right?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that hard. Why is it downturned? Well, there's been no testimony, no evidence as to why it's downturned in the oboe reference. In other words, that was downturned just to maximize the strength. May I borrow your hook, sir?
Yeah.
The purpose of having the downturned edges...
Okay, purposes are irrelevant.
No, purposes are irrelevant.
The point is, once one of skill in the art has a hook with downturned edges and knows that he doesn't want to pull it too tight because that has problems, and knows that he doesn't want to sag it too much because that has problems, kink on the one hand, crosstalk on the other, why isn't it obvious that he's going to use the J-hook precisely as the method tells him to use it?
Well, Well, you can't start with our method and go backwards.
Oh, yeah, that's again hindsight. The point is, these are both in the record. They're both there. Why isn't it obvious to make them combine
them? Why isn't it obvious to combine them? Well, again, the standard
isn't... As soon as the J-hook comes on the market, doesn't someone recognize that's the way to use it?
Obviously not, to use the term, because we know from the secondary considerations that nobody had done it. I mean, it's us trying to guess what the persons of ordinary skill would have done, but that's not proper here. The proper thing is to look at the testimony. The testimony, all the testimony, all the unrebutted testimony, was that it was not obvious, that nobody had done it before, that it had this huge commercial success once realized.
The testimony is that it wasn't obvious because what?
What's that?
Why? I mean, you have the hook, you have the standard, you put them together, you have the claim limitation satisfied.
Well, we had the standard before, and we had the hook before, but nobody had done that. Nobody had combined it because they were looking at using
different
things.
So what you're saying
things.
Is that there is a prima facie case of obviousness here, but that the secondary considerations rebut that? Is that what you're saying?
No. I agree that if there were, the secondary considerations are unrebutted, so they would override it. But there isn't a prima facie case of obviousness. Again, because nobody was motivated to combine them because there were all these cross purposes. You wanted to have different types of things. And some of the evidence in the record are these things called bridle hooks. Cable ties. A cable tie you'll find in your house, it's one of those little plastic doodads that you wrap around something, slip one end through the other, and pull it tight. That's how they hung this cable.
But why wouldn't someone have been motivated to combine them? What was the testimony as to why there was no motivation to combine?
Because people were looking at doing other things. Because they thought that you didn't want to have any sag. Their motivation was to completely eliminate it, to have this completely taut cable.
Does Claim 17 require sag?
Well, it hasn't been completely construed to that fashion, but it does say sag. And it would be our interpretation that, yes, it does require some degree of sag, but less than a foot of sag. And that's what all the testimony has been. I mean, we have to, as Judge Newman pointed out, look at why they decided to copy this hook. Why they decided to use this instead of something else. Because it's important, because the industry recognized that this is what matters. And in fact, this wasn't just this arbitrary decision to go out and use this hook. We have to look at what Doc's Marketing really did. The first time they copied the hook so exactly it had Caddy's name on it, it had Erico's trade name on it. They realized they couldn't sell it, but they sold it anyway. Then they came back with another hook. They just got rid of the Caddy name. Erico found out, told them, hey, you're infringing our patent. They didn't say, no, we're not infringing. They didn't say, no, the patent's not invalid. They said, we were not going to do it. But they lied. They did it anyway. And they continued to do it. And
they had a right to copy the hook. It was prior art, right?
Yes. They had a right to copy the hook, but they didn't have a right to sell it in the way they were. If they were just going to put these in supermarkets, that would be fine. But all the evidence is that they used it and advertised it specifically for Erico's market, specifically for using communications cable, specifically for doing it in the method. We're not suing them for making a hook. We're suing them for inducing others and contributing to other people's infringement because they're telling people you must use it in this fashion, which was Erico's market. That's what Erico got the patent for. That's what Judge O'Malley, in four very well-reasoned decisions, found justified an injunction.
Okay, any questions? Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Mr. Sprinkle.
I promise to be brief. There's no finding by the court that there was inducement to infringe, strictly contributory infringement. There's absolutely no evidence in the record that Doc's Marketing told anybody how to use this hook. In fact, Doc's Marketing sells these hooks in large quantities to supply houses, who then sell them to contractors.
But the only question before us is whether to preserve the status quo while these aspects are litigated. They haven't yet been finally decided. Isn't that right? We're talking about livelihoods?
Right, they have not been finally decided, but there's been no finding of inducement to infringe.
So it's really just a question, again, of which status quo. Do we preserve the status quo of the infringing activity, if I can call it that, or the status quo before Dox Marketing entered the market.
Does the J-hook have any non-infringing uses? Is it a staple article or non-staple?
My view would be that the J-hook, the reason we have the name J-hook that it appears in the dictionary, is that it has lots of uses. That's why we have it.
I thought you told us that Judge O'Malley specifically asked for evidence of non-infringing uses.
Judge O'Malley asked us to specify non-infringing uses in her order granting the injunction. Obviously, we could not come to an agreement on that, because if we did come to an agreement on that, that would destroy the contributory infringement argument, because if there's a substantial non-infringing use, there can be no contributory infringement.
Did you identify any non-infringing use?
At the time that they were selling the hooks, the non-infringing use, as far as we were concerned, were stringing the HVAC lines.
You mean using it as they taught, because of your view that the patent is invalid?
No, Your Honor. They teach using it for communication cable, which means Cat5 cable, the stuff that you hook up to your computer.
Okay,
that's
a different kind of cable.
That's a different kind of cable than HVAC systems. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Sprinkle, Mr. Campbell, the case is taken under submission. The two other cases will be considered on the briefs.
Thank you, ma'am.